This week's Linux Daily is brought to you by the Golden Group and the event they produce, ISPCon. The event is being held April the 14th through 16th. Check it out at ispcon.com. Also, IDG World Events. And there are two events, the Linux World Conference and Expo and Macworld. Also, Linux Journal, linuxquestions.org, linuxtoday.com, and Fuse, F-Y-U-Z-E.com. But most of all, we'd like to thank you, the listeners, who throw a few dollars in our tip jar. It takes us a couple hours a day to produce this show. If you like what we do, think of it as a 25-cent per day investment. That works out to a mere $100 per year to subscribe for our show. So, is 25 cents a day too much to ask for a couple of hours of our time? And now, on with our show. Hello, this is Jeff Gerhardt for the Linux Daily, and this week, we're going to have a whole series of shows about the SCO Group. This series is titled, Peeling Back the Onion, The Truth Behind SCO. This series is in no small way motivated by Stephen Vaughn Nichols and his article in eWeek this past week called Torvalds Did Want to See the SCO Code. It's not only a great article, so kudos to Steve, but it also lit a flame underneath me because I've been wanting to do this series of shows on the Tuesday Night Linux show anyways, and the Linux Daily gives me a little bit more freedom to do this. So this entire week, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, we're going to do this series of shows. Today we're going to talk a little bit about the background. Stephen's article talked about what transpired during May, June, and July of 2003. Important times indeed, but we're going to be going back a little bit further to give some background to this. This is important because when you look at Stephen's article and you look at the dialogue that did indeed go between Linus and Darryl McBride and also Eric Raymond and Darryl McBride, you need to ask yourself, well, why did he do that? Well, there's good reasons, but we need to start with a little bit of background information. So if we climb into the Wayback Machine, we find ourselves back at the summer of 2000. Caldera had just completed an initial public offering and had cash in their pocket, and they were making use of it. They were doing a lot of PR, they were doing a lot of hiring, and they were doing some acquisitions as well. One of those acquisitions was a failing Unix company, or a seemingly failing Unix company, called the SCO Group. In August of 2000, Caldera announced the purchase of the SCO Group. This was big news. One of the major news stories of the August 2000 Linux World Conference and Expo. I had people from Caldera coming up to me at that expo telling me, I've seen the Unix source code and it sucks. I had code hackers from inside of Caldera coming up to me and telling me of how it's already planning on implementing some of the old Unix code into the Linux kernel. The whole company was indeed very, very excited. There were good reasons for them to be so excited. This was a smart move by Ransom Love. One of Ransom Love's smarter moves at the time, everybody involved within Linux thought that this was an ideal move for a company like Caldera. Why? Well, simply because Red Hat was winning. If Caldera and SUSE and all the other distributions wanted to continue to survive, they needed to find areas where they could operate in that would support their particular business model. Caldera had always been a little bit different from Red Hat, a lot bit different. And that difference had oftentimes gotten Caldera into hot water with people within the Linux community. For it was Caldera who was sort of using the GPL in a lot of ways as a nod and a wink license. They would observe it 90% of the time and in 90% of the ways they should observe it, or at least the way they felt they should observe it. Bottom line, they just weren't always a 100% GPL-compliant company, but they were doing enough that they kept most of the people off of their back. Not all of the people, but just most of the people. And indeed, there were times when Caldera really did do some really great things for the Linux community as a whole. Now, there was always some kind of a self-motivation behind it, but nevertheless, they did step up to the plate on numerous occasions and do some truly remarkable things. They were an early supporter of LPI, and in fact, paid for a traveling classroom that went around to all of the comm event, offered 2 or 3 hour tutorials on Linux to give a Windows NT admin the tools needed to study up and take an LPI certification. These were free. These were not cheap to produce. But yeah, Caldera did get PR from them, so yes, you could say that there was a suspect motivation. But they still did this on behalf of the Linux community as a whole, and LPI in specific. So not everything inside of Caldera was evil, as a lot of people said, or claimed. So the purchase of the Skull Group, when you think about it, was very, very logical for a company like Caldera. Caldera, treading that line between open and closed, did not have the diehard loyalty that the Debian users gave to the Debian project, nor the Red Hat users gave to the Red Hat distribution. At this time, SUS was just, they just weren't a player in the United States at that time. So what better for a company that's sort of treading the line between closed and open than to buy pretty good, well-established, closed-source company that's selling a product that's virtually identical to yours so that you can use that channel and that customer base in the future to sell your mainline product? So the goal of Caldera in purchasing the SCO Group with their IPO funds was to take that channel, train that channel, and in time convert the Unix user into a Caldera Open Linux user, a built-in revenue stream. It was really a great idea when you think about it, and it probably would have worked had not certain things transpired, in particular the dot-com bust and the ensuing recession caused by it. Well, yeah, then there was that 9/11 thing, too. But when you compound the death of a large part of the internet industry and the impact of the terrorist attack of 9/11 on our economy, things went south in a big-time hurry, and in particular for the IT industry group. So all that hypothetical SCO Group channel that Caldera had purchased were looking at themselves in mid-recession going, my revenue's already down. Do I really, really, really want to convert my customer base, product A, that they pay me an annual license fee for, to product B, where they don't have to pay me if they don't want to pay me? This was a very difficult choice to make for that SCO partner channel during the middle of the recession. So in large measure, there was a bit of a rebellion by the SCO channel. So in 2002, as the country was first starting to dig its way out of the recession, Caldera paused for a moment to look at itself as a corporate entity. In May, they made a series of announcements dealing with the financial condition of the company. They had a couple quarters in a row where their revenues were 15-ish, 16-ish million dollars, and that was nice, but the reality is an awful lot of that revenue was generated by Unix license fees. So they started doing some restructuring. They cut 15% of their staff, dropped themselves down to 400, anticipating that was going to save them $7-8 million a year in overhead expenses. They had moved operational units of SCO and Caldera together to do additional money savings, and so they were hoping that they were going to post some halfway decent port towards the end of the second quarter of the 02 fiscal year. But when the beans were counted, and they counted up the three-month quarter ending April 30th, 2002, they reported net losses of $6.6 million. So even with a whole bunch of debt requirement, reorganization, consolidation, and the elimination of employees, you had on your hand one unhappy group of board of directors, an unhappy group of investors, and an unhappy group of stockholders. I've always sort of wondered about the connection, if this was one of those final nails in a coffin, but a mere one day after releasing the dismal financial report for the second quarter of 02, a press release came out about a new thing, United Linux. United Linux was the brainchild of one Ransom Love, president and CEO of Caldera. United Linux was to partner with SUSE, Connectiva, Turbo Linux, AMD, Borland, Computer Associates, Fujitsu, Fujitsu Siemens, HP, IBM, Intel, NEC, a whole bunch of other companies on coming up with a uniform Linux distro that everybody could use. It really is a great idea from the standpoint of a Ransom Love / Caldera when you're looking in the big picture of the Linux world. After all, Red Hat was winning. Something had to be done, and I honestly believe that this was a great idea by Ransom. just as I believe the purchase of Scope was originally a great idea. However, something tells me that the board of directors was not happy on this change of direction the company was going. And so on June the 27th of 2002, a new era at Caldera came to pass. Darryl McBride was named as the new chief executive officer of Caldera. Keep in mind, it had been from August of 2000 until June of 2002 where Caldera owned Scope. The height of the recession, the dot-com collapse of 2000, followed by the disaster to our economy during September of 2001. So because Ransom model didn't work during this period of time, they brought in Darryl McBride. So here we are, summer of 2002. The stage is set for Darryl McBride to walk in the door. Now, Darryl was no light. Darryl had worked at Franklin Covey Company. He had been their internet strategist. He knew quite a bit about the internet business. He knew quite a bit about the service provider business, ISV business. He'd also spent a good deal of time at Icon Office Solutions as well as Novell. This man was no lightweight. So he walks in the door over at Caldera, and first thing he does, obviously, as he looks at the books. It is June of 2002. Now, Caldera, as a company, is faced with a dilemma. They have gone through most of their IPO money already, and they are looking at a fairly serious problem. They're going to have to face their channel partners in a mere couple of months with some rather bad news that they have lost all of their money. They've churned through all of their money, and they need to address the situation rather quickly. So what does McBride do? He turns to what he knows. What he knows is, number one, the Scope part of the business is making all the money. Number two, they've got a rather sizable channel built. All they have to do is give that channel things they can sell. He's an ISV guy. Darryl is an ISV guy. So the week of the Caldera Geo Forum in August of 2002, Darryl makes a series of announcements that start with, well, number one, the Caldera name is gone. They changed the name to the Scope Group. You should have been there. I was. This guy could have been the Messiah. That part of the audience that was comprised of the Scope channel, which was probably 2/3 to 3/4 of the people in the room, were on their feet thunderously applauding. You instantly had an entire room full of incredibly well-motivated people who were very, very happy with Darryl McBride because Darryl wasn't going to force him to that old Linux stuff that Ransom Love was trying to convince them was the direction they ought to go to. Darryl loved Unix. Darryl loved Scope. Darryl loved license fees. They were all happy. This, my friends, was a manipulation, not only for the future of the direction that the company was going to go into, but something you need to learn about Darryl McBride right away. We all call Darryl crazy. We all call Darryl evil. We all misunderstand Darryl if we don't understand one thing about Darryl. Darryl's a smart man, and Darryl knows, above all other things, how to motivate and manipulate people. We'll talk more about motivations and manipulations when we come to Wednesday's show, but we'll let you in on this little tidbit. This early change to the Scope name was designed to do nothing else but to gain the loyalty and gain the trust of the Scope channel, because the new former Caldera, now Scope Group, needed the loyalty of the Scope channel if they were going to survive as a business entity. So what was Darryl's second step? Well, like I said, Darryl came up from an internet background of sorts, and so he turned his ISV experience to good use and immediately signed an agreement between the June 27th time frame and Scope Forum in August, signed an agreement with Vistacom, a company that had a back-end system that provided e-commerce websites that were fairly automated, easy to build, profitable to build. And so now Vistacom was, for all intents and purposes, a captured entity within the new Scope Group. And so, concurrently to launching the new name of the company, they launched a new division of the company called ScoBiz. With ScoBiz, an existing Scope partner could simply sign a license agreement with Scope and be granted a territory of which they could exercise and use that to sell e-commerce websites. This is a billable hour business, plus the fact it has a residual for web hosting. One thing that people within the support business understand is a billable hours business. SCOBIZ was a simple, logical formula that anybody who was in the support business could understand. Plus, SCO made some very, very aggressive offers to the population of the SCO channel. In particular was one that if you worked the agreement, if you actually followed through on the conditions of the license agreement and worked the agreement so that you had followed through on all of your obligations, and you just weren't happy with the e-commerce style of ISV development, SCO would buy the business back from you. You could spin it off as an independent business, and SCO would buy it. It was basically an opportunity to get into a business, and if you didn't like it, you could sell it off real easy. You had a pre-built existing way to dump a weak business unit. A couple of days later, SCO announced their financial report. Now, mind you, the truth of the matter is that the good news that was to come out of this financial report was really all of the efforts done by Ransom Love and the previous executive team during latter part of the recession. It was those difficult decisions of the layoffs and the consolidations and the hard work that had to be done. So in some ways, Darrell was just plain lucky in all of this as well. For on August the 28th, 2002, SCO released their quarterly report for third quarter 2002, and the news was good. And the losses were reduced. They still lost money, but not nearly as much. They only lost $4 million that quarter. Revenues were flat, but they had already started talking about increased revenues generated by their SCOBIZ new business unit. Apparently, a lot of people in the SCO channel had signed contracts during the previous 2 days during the GeoForm event. But still, you know, the SCO stock was not performing all that well, maybe a little better, but it was still kind of flat. And bottom line, folks, the simple responsibility of a chief executive officer is theoretically to the stockholders of the company. So, this all the new business units, the Team SCO, the SCO X, the SCO Biz, the SCO this, the SCO that, the reduced overhead, the increased profit margins really weren't enough. But what happened next really did tip the hand of SCO. A hint of what was going to happen was trotted out the last day of SCO Forum. Early at SCO Forum, Darrell had dragged out an organizational chart of Unix to show all the derivations of Unix and how proud he was to have acquired the source code to this incredibly broad and diverse Unix source. But there was something funny about the language that Darrell was using at August of 2002. And not very many people in the audience noticed. I didn't take note of a single reporter questioning this language, but it bothered me. And so I happened to have the misfortune of having the very last interview that Darrell McBride did at GeoForm 2002. And just before the interview ended, I was sitting there with the PR staff and Darrell McBride, turned to Darrell and said, "You know, Darrell, I've got to ask you this question, and I want a simple and I want a straightforward answer." I said, "Darrell, the language that you've been using the last, 24 to 48 hours really gives me a funny feeling. It leads me to believe that you are claiming ownership of the Linux source code." And he responded by saying, "Oh, no, we're not claiming ownership of the Linux source code, but we are definitely claiming that Linux owes its historical roots to Unix." And I said, "That's odd." I said, "I would agree that there's things about programming style that were learned by the Unix developers, and there's processes that were used by Linux developers were the same processes that were used by Unix developers years before, but it's a stretch to push it anything beyond a coincidental historical relationship." So I have followed that question up. I said, "Darrell, it's just not good enough. I want you to answer this question definitively. Do you or will you at any time in the future claim to own the Linux source code?" And his response to me at that time was, "Well, you know, it's impossible for me to answer a hypothetical about would I ever do anything ever." I said, "I can't." He said, Darrell McBride said, "I can't really answer that question. It's impossible for me to answer it." And he's probably right. It is impossible for him to answer a question like that. But there's also a such thing as body language. And I could tell, as he was sitting there, and as the PR people were sitting there, And as his staff of supporters were sitting there, that he was definitely uncomfortable about answering that question. I was dissatisfied with the answer he gave, and I think he was dissatisfied in the way he gave the answer. A week later, well, less than a week later, I think it was 2 days later, I first predicted that I anticipated sometime in the future that SCO would start laying a claim to the Linux intellectual property somehow. Now, what happened next in this chain of events happened in October, and that was Darryl McBride hiring one of his very close friends and allies, Chris Sontag, and put him in the role of Senior Vice President of the Operating Systems Division. There was a line in the press release. You can even find the press release at the SCO website if you so choose to do that. But there was a line on the press release that in 2002 bothered me, and in hindsight, the obvious is there. And I'll read that line. As Senior VP of SCO's Operating Systems Division, Sontag will be responsible for directing the marketing and strategy of SCO's Operating Systems Division, guiding corporate marketing, and overseeing the development of SCO's intellectual property. This is it. This is where they showed their hand. I shortly thereafter again asked Darryl McBride in a telephone conversation if the announcement of hiring Chris Sontag meant that SCO was going to lay claim to the Linux intellectual property. He again refused to answer the question. So I am of the opinion now, again, in hindsight, and again, this is opinion, I think SCO was looking for an excuse to sue somebody. IBM just happened to appear at the wrong place at the wrong time. The lawsuit would have happened regardless. We'll pick up the story on Wednesday's edition of the Linux Daily, and we'll talk about the cult of personality that formed around Darryl McBride, as well as reasonable steps by reasonable people. We'll talk to you on Wednesday.